1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannon with you until three today. Now, to kick off today, let me just read you an ad that we found in St. Bridget's Parish newsletter. This is an ad for a caretaker stroke verger required. This is for St. Bridget's Cathedral, which is in the United Diocese of Meath and Kildare. That's the Church of Ireland. The caretaker stroke verger will receive a free house in return for certain duties, which include preparing the cathedral for services, cleaning, keeping the grounds, opening the cathedral to the public, and opening the cathedral to the public. And it says the position would suit a couple, and gives the numbers and details there for to contact them. Maurice Gibson, good afternoon to you.
Hi, how are you?
Good, Maurice. Maurice, you work as a school caretaker.
Yeah, I'm doing it for the last 2 years there in Ace. So, it's a fairly strategic job, as in there's a lot of work involved in it. And when I seen the advertisement, I was a bit like, okay, this is not really what caretakers, we pay tax. We're hired sometimes part-time, full-time. It's all full above board. We have stamps if we're not working during the summer. But to see this, it's like, okay, who are they aiming for? Because it's like, my theory is that if the person is doing this, they have to be getting some kind of payment, as in to support themselves. So if they're on the social welfare, they have to be available for work. So how would be available for work as a caretaker if you're actually not available? So
yeah, now we did contact the Church of Ireland Parish of St. Bridget's, but they weren't available to talk to us about it. But I mean, just reading the ad, it does seem clear that the idea is you do all this work, prepare the cathedral for services, you clean, you keep the grounds, you open the cathedral to the public, and for that, you get the use of a house.
Yeah, my problem there, I assume the house would be owned by the diocese. I wouldn't assume that so basically they're getting the caretaker for free. And my problem is that the person wouldn't be contributing towards the state, as in they wouldn't have any kind of, if what if that pension built up or stamps built up, from a DSP point of view, you know, they would have to be available for work. And then what if that couple or that person got sick? Are they then thrown out of the house and then they're left homeless? It's I've never seen it before, because caretakers are very well respected, as in they do a lot of work with contractors and cleaning and maintenance and gardening. And when I seen that, I was like, it doesn't tick any boxes, as in the rules.
Yeah, would you think there's caretakers out there that would be willing to put in all that work and just for a roof over their heads?
Yeah. No, most people, even in the schools we work in, is that any schools will go to have parent councils, and they do voluntary work. I mean, I volunteer in Punchestown, as in for the vaccination centre. And I do not know why they didn't just approach their parishioners and say, we're looking for volunteers to help out with groundwork. Because we get a lot of work done in schools that I couldn't do because I wouldn't have the time. And parents council come in and they'll volunteer to do extra work, because you could have carpenters are available. So I don't understand how they're just, basically, for me, I can see there's just somebody, we're going to give you a house that more than likely they probably own, and we're going to get free work out of you. And the person still has to pay bills, they'll have to feed themselves. So where is their income coming from? So
yeah, well, there are some of the questions we had as well. And as I say, we did contact the Church of Ireland, the local Church of Ireland there, but they wouldn't discuss the advert with us, or what it meant, or what people in that position would do. I wonder, is it some kind of a reflection, though, of where we're at in this country at the moment, that there is a knowledge now, there's so many people are struggling to find accommodation, that maybe the Church of Ireland there in Kildare think that they will get somebody in on this basis?
Yeah, I can understand that, and if that is the reason behind it. But obviously,
would it be right, though, Maurice? I mean, would that be right in your view?
It is. If it's a very good gesture for somebody who's homeless and or a family are going to be thrown out, I think that would be a brilliant gesture. So, because they would definitely assume that the house is owned by the diocese. But then, they're looking for somebody who is specifically qualified, because to be a caretaker, you have to be, you know, a handyman, you have to know the carpentry, you have to know a bit of everything. And a lot of lads who are doing it are qualified engineers, and it suits them to do it part-time or full-time. But it's a lot of work. So I think it's, if they wanted to help somebody out, it could get to a couple who are basically going to be thrown out in the street and saying, we have a free house here, and without any conditions. That would have been more, and maybe contact some charitable groups who, for the homeless, that would have been, but then saying you're going to have to work for the house and pay the bills. So it's obviously, there's a loophole in it, and I'd be very worried about the loophole, as in, what if it doesn't work out? Are they going to be thrown out of the house? That's my big theory, and that they should be looking for volunteers if they want to do works around the diocese and all that kind of stuff, because we get volunteers in schools all the time from the parents' council. Yeah. So it doesn't for me, it raises flags. It red flags all the time, because it's a specialised job. So
indeed. Okay, Mark, will you stay with this, Morris? I want to bring in Deirdre Nolan. Deirdre, good afternoon.
Hi there, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, you've been listening to Morris there and hearing about this ad.
Yeah.
And your
absolutely.
Point?
My point is that I don't think it's agreeable, really, because you're effectively at the beck and call of the diocese. Do you know what I mean? Like, so you don't really, it's not really a home that is yours.
Yeah, you know, that you're dependent. As Mara said, if it didn't work out there, what would happen to you?
That's it. Like, how you back out on the road again, do you know? Like, so I wouldn't be agreeing with it.
What's your own situation there, Deirdre?
My own situation is I'm struggling to get housing at all. Like, you know, I'm in rented accommodation, which is huge pay. And I'm kind of in a situation where I work to pay rent, and that's it. You know, I had no spare cash. There's no kind of a life or anything after that. And it's tough, you know, to kind of get to the stage that I'm at. I'm early 40s, and that's my situation, you know.
Yeah, are you single, Deirdre?
I'm single, yeah. I'm single, and I don't have any dependents.
Yeah, I think there's a huge gap there for people in your position, because I think the entire mortgage market now is set up for two income couples, really. They're the only people who seem to be able to get anything like a mortgage that could get, you know, go towards buying anything that's on the market at the moment.
Yeah, I can get a mortgage of about 110, you know.
Yeah, that's not going to get you very far. Yeah.
No, it won't.
And when you see ads like that, you know, free house in return for certain duties, some people will be tempted, I would imagine, because they'll
be
in your position, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely they will. I suppose if you didn't have any dependents and you were kind of more carefree or younger, maybe, perhaps, but I wouldn't.
I think they're manipulating the system, because I know there is a housing problem, and to their advantage, in my opinion. And then why is a legal contract? Where is there going to be legal documentation regarding you can't throw us out if it doesn't work out? And then so it's too vague, it's way too vague, and too many red flags for me. And
you think they're taking advantage of the situation people might be finding themselves in?
Oh
now.
Yeah. If they're being very genuine, there could be somebody in the local dialysis who basically, they know that it can't pay the mortgage and they're going to be thrown out with kids and family, whatever it is. They could have said, like, we have a free house here for you, and you can just pay your bills and do it normal, and it's there for you, and until you get sorted out. That would have been a very genuine thing. But to look for somebody who's qualified and to do free work, as in it is free work, and it could be 40 hours a week, it could be 50, and it's very vague, and it doesn't bode well for me when I see that.
It doesn't sit right with you. Let me bring in Brian. Brian, good afternoon, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, you saw the ad.
I did, yeah. I just thought, yeah, it's great for a couple, with one person working, it's ideal, but for in my own case, as a single person going in, what do I live on? Like, how do I eat?
Yeah, it does. And to be fair to the diocese, it does say this position would suit a couple. So maybe they have in mind, that one person could do the work and the other person could maybe earn a living outside of it.
Like, there still has to be, like, that salary has to cover two people as well.
Yeah.
You know, like, fine, it's what, like, I don't know what the rent in Kildare is. Is it 1,500 roughly about a month?
I think we looked it up in the office, something between, coming up on 2,000 actually, for a two-bed house in Kildare town, as far as we know in that area. So, I mean, it's not nothing, to be fair.
Year, okay. But still, there's no, right, 6 months down the line, if the person isn't working out, what happens then?
Yeah, I agree.
That is a big issue. But I suppose, to be fair again, a lot of tenants would say they don't have a lot of security of tenure, even if they're paying rent.
Right, and where, like there's grey areas. Like, does revenue get involved in this? You know, is there benefit in kind? Is there, you know?
Yeah, just the overall point, though, the idea that you would work for your accommodation and that would be it, that would be the arrangement. I suppose it is a reflection on how valuable accommodation is now to people.
It's true, yeah.
Would you do it, Brian?
Would I do it? If I had another person with me? Yeah, I'd certainly consider it. Because I'd be thinking of, right, it's rent, it's 24,000 a year. Can you go and, like, I'm not going to save anything by doing it because I'm not getting paid for it. But, like, I still think that there's an incentive there for two people.
If the other person had a job outside of that.
Yeah. But, it would have to be a fairly, like, if I put two kids into the mix as well, like, it would have to be a substantial salary as well coming in. Second, the salary would have to be substantial.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it is. Morris. If somebody, if you did get, say, the other person just said they're on PUP payments and suddenly they got the job back and say, okay, I'm not able to do this now, but I'm after giving up my rented accommodation. Are they saying, okay, the diocese say then, okay, well, you're not allowed to stay here because you can't accommodate the free caretaker role. And then you're like, and then plus, because it is a caretaker role, you have to be very specific on basically the qualifications the person is doing it. So then if somebody does, obviously if they are qualified like that, they probably will get back to work. Then they're suddenly, you're not suitable anymore. We'll give you a month to get out. So there's so many open doors that they haven't really ticked the boxes and red flags. So that is a big issue.
Yeah, mind you, Des, good afternoon, Des.
Good afternoon, Katie, how are you?
Yeah, what are you making of this?
Well, to be honest with you, I actually haven't got a problem with that because, you know, there are various opportunities and you know, it might not be for the individual on the radio there with you, but there are people, I'm sure, out there that I would actually suit, you know, that could be in a semi-retirement position and are renting their properties and don't need a salary because they either have enough money to keep themselves going, but the accommodation would be a great little throw into the mix actually for them. So, you know, it's not for everybody, but if your man is working in a school caretaker for him, that's good for him, that's his prerogative and that's his job. But, you know, to dismiss it as being unethical, I believe actually is incorrect.
Yeah, but my problem is that if the person, even if they're semi-retired and it suits them and they get sick, and which can happen, or they involved in a car accident, where are they positioned then in regarding this free house?
But sure, if you want to turn that around, you can always say that if I got sick tomorrow morning, who's going to pay my mortgage?
But there is, like, what is the stipulation? Like, I mean, if I couldn't pay a rent or something like that, I'm not in that position looking enough. If I didn't pay a rent, you know, there is groups I can go to, there is help I can get out there. But if you're on a diocese house, which is basically owned by the diocese, it could be completely out of the loop. So you could be in a no man's land regarding contractual agreements. So that would be.
But you're in no man's land in landlords this day and age as well. You can be kicked out of a house after the
I know that, but they are getting very strict with them. And because I know friends of mine who do rent houses, and he said literally there's people do squatters' rights. They have some. There's so much groups out there that will support people who are in trouble with rent and arrears with landlords. But with a diocese, that it could be a completely different vague area, and they mightn't get involved in that. So a person could be left that can't work in the job due to illness now, and then suddenly the diocese say, look, you're not able to fulfil your agreement, so we're going to look for somebody else.
And yeah. Absolutely, but do you not think that would be the opportunity for the person or the people that are going to get are going to take on the role to ensure that there's clauses signed up and contracts are signed up? Because, like, you read the ad and you're assuming that what's in the ad is correct, but until you actually talk to the diocese themselves and see what the clauses are, I'm sure they're not going to kick anybody out in the street tomorrow morning if they don't work out, because, you know, that would be beyond unethical. And I, what my point really is, that whilst you may not be in favour of it, there are people out there that would absolutely jump on the to take that position on because if it suits them and their lifestyle or the circumstances that they're in.
But Des, do you think there should be a principle that if you are doing that level of work, and I mean even just looking at the list of things you're expected to do for it, cleaning, keeping the grounds, preparing the cathedral for services, that if you're doing that level of work there should be a salary attached to that?
Well, not necessarily, Katie, because a lot of people do voluntary work, actually. In my community, there's a lot of people doing voluntary work. They don't expect to get remuneration for it. But as I'm saying, this is a particular job that there are people out there that it would suit, and they would actually take it. And, you know, I even at the top of my own head, I know one or two people or couples that would absolutely jump on that, because it's an ideal opportunity for them to get out of where they are, paying big rents, you know, and not being committed to a job that they're in. This would be ideal. So my point is, and I'll just say it again, there are people out there that would suit. And I think to jump on the bandwagon that is out there that, you know, it's unethical or, you know, it's not taking the right approach, I think is fundamentally wrong, because there are people that it would suit. And it's not for everybody, okay, but there is definitely individuals out there that would suit, actually.
Yeah, okay,
but
I think, again, okay, and sorry, go on. Let you finish.
No, and I think, again, to be honest with you, you know, whilst it wouldn't suit you, you know, you've got your job as a caretaker, you know, which is a fantastic goal.
Yeah, well, I do. Yeah, I also do voluntary work. I do voluntary work in Punchestown, as in vaccination centre, and I do full shift, and apart from getting fed, so I am a volunteer. So they should. There's enough practitioners out there, because we get loads of parents who come in to do free work. So with the size of the diocese, they could have said, right, let's give that to genuine homeless people who are going to be thrown out, and then look for volunteers, because I volunteer. I do nearly 15 hours a week and in the vaccination centre in Punchestown. And so they're like, okay, we're going to give you the house, but we're obviously looking for somebody who's experienced, and we're obviously looking for somebody who's going to work the hour and just get a free house and pay the bills. So they should have given it to somebody who they know, basically a couple who are basically going to be thrown out of the house, and there's no problem getting volunteers. People are genuine, like yourself and myself, who will volunteer to work in any community. So
is that part of this, though, perhaps, that in church issues, not just Church of Ireland, and in all parishes, that they are so used to having so many people step up as volunteers, that there is some bit of an expectation that people are not looking for a full salary for the work that they're doing? Des?
Well, I would say so. Yeah, I would say that's probably a big part of it, actually. So perhaps their expectations was that, you know, the property is available there. It's sitting probably free and idle, and it could be an opportunity. Like I said, there are individuals or people out there that would actually, you know, would suit their lifestyle. You know,
I wonder. It doesn't make any specification in the ad, but I wonder would they be looking for a Church of Ireland, somebody of the Church of Ireland faith for the position, or would they take anyone?
I don't know. No.
Let me bring in Sandra. Sandra Byrne, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
You have worked as a caretaker in the past.
Yes, and absolutely loved it. But I agree with one of your callers there, the guy that does a lot of voluntary work. Mm-hmm. He was saying that it could suit, and it would suit more of a couple. And you said that in the ad. And at the time, it was myself and my husband. And it was absolutely, we got our premises rent-free. All our bills were paid. So in terms of, you know, needing to work as well, I don't know what, as that chap said as well, you would need to go in, you sit and talk to these people. You don't just, you know, go by what the ad says.
So just Sandra, you got your accommodation for free. You had all your bills, your utility bills,
our
and all that paid.
Electricity bill. We got our coal. We had an open coal fire at the time. We had all our coal free, electricity bills free, phone bill. Everything was, you know, provided with the premises.
And were you able to? Was it a full time? Was that a full time job then?
Yeah, well, no, it didn't probably entail as much as what this one is advertising. But it still was. You were basically nearly on call for, you know, there was alarms, there was premises that were alarmed. The alarm could go off at any time of the night and you had to go down and look after it, you know, and check it out. There was also a guard dog on the premises at night time. It was pretty deserted, actually, but we actually loved it.
But would you have another income coming in or have some savings to live on?
Well, yeah, but that's my point. When I say I agree with you, that's where probably it's more suited to a couple. Because especially as somebody else mentioned, if you have children, we did have two young children at the time. So, but one was able to work, you know, and but my point is as well, you don't need, somebody was saying about you need a decent big income as well. But depending on what's involved, and that's my point, you need to speak to the people who are, you know, if you were interested in that position. Because all we basically needed was for food or savings, if you know what I mean, if you wanted to put money by. Because all our utilities were paid. We'd no rent, we'd no mortgage.
You'd no bills, basically.
So there was basically no bills apart from food.
And
so there was very little finance needed, if you know what I mean, to live.
And we're talking about this in the past tense, so did it end well? Or?
Well, that was another point I was going to make. I know people are saying that, oh, if it doesn't work out, they throw you out. And again, these are things you have to, as one of your callers mentioned, you speak about this to the people. You don't just go in on a whim, you know, on an ad. I mean, you sit down and you discuss what's involved. And if it doesn't work out for you, well, then you're entitled to leave. But if you've taken it on, you know, it's up to you, in my mind, if you want to leave, it's up to you to find somewhere else, not them. But in our circumstances, the company had to close down. And we were actually, they were very good. We were compensated for having to leave. So we were given a certain amount of money towards something. So I think you can't just go by what's read, if you know what I mean. You need to speak to people and see exactly what's involved. And as that caller said, I definitely think it's probably more suited to a couple.
Yeah.
But for me, right, every school will have its external security cameras. So basically, they'll check if there's an alarm monitor. So if you're on call nearly 24/7 and you're doing this, it's not just a normal caretaker's role. It's a nearly full-time role. You're basically at their beck and call. And if something goes off, alarm goes off, where if alarm goes off and the school, I'm out of school, we have a company that comes in and they check the alarms, they check the facility, because we pay them to come in to do it and we pay a call-out charge. And I assume the diocese can pop that system, so that basically you can do the caretaking work and this is your select hours. But if you're going in there and you're, because I wouldn't go in unless I wouldn't have any of the staff go in unless I have backup to go in and check alarm in case there's an intruder in. And that's a whole different ballgame. That's a security issue. So this.
Well, sorry, when you're finished,
job.
If I could.
Yes, yeah, Sandra.
Sorry for cutting across you there. Well, sorry, when I say we have to check it out, that it was recommended, we were always told to be around the guards. It's just that we were the key holders for the premises. We lived on the premises. We weren't expected to go down on our own to check out for the intruders. We'd ring the guards, and then we'd be the key holders. And when the guards get there, the guards go in. And we're
fair
on the premises.
Yeah, fair
so that's
enough,
fair
yeah.
enough.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not a lot to ask.
Can
bring the guards and be there and just be the key holders, you know?
Indeed. Can I bring Deirdre? Do we still have Deirdre? Have we still got Deirdre on the line?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, Deirdre. No, I'm just struck by what you said earlier about the position you find yourself in. You're in your 40s, I think you said?
Early 40s, yeah.
Early 40s. Deirdre would be very careful to say that. Early 40s. Practically your late 30s, let's say.
Just about.
But you find yourself, you're single, and you want, you obviously have looked into it. You'd love to be able to buy a place, but you're saying that's just not, that's not going to happen for you.
It's not going to happen. No. It's hard to say that, but it's the way it is, you know. And I've gone over to Spain. I went over to Spain in 2018 to try and make it over there. I didn't speak the language, so that was my own kind of a fault. Mm-hmm. But so I'm back here, like, and I'm down in the country, and it's grand.
Where are you from originally?
I'm a dub.
You're a dub. And are you in the country because of the cost of living and the cost of accommodation? Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly it. So I got back from Spain and I just went through that, let's say, and kind of priced out the price of have rents in Ireland, mm-hmm. and then the cost of the job, let's say my income then as well. And I chose the county that I'm in on that basis.
Right. That the amount that the income you'd have could give you that could cover your rent, basically.
Just my rent and my bills. That's it. And my food. Yeah.
It's such a treadmill, then, though, isn't it? Because
it is.
Where
it
are you is, going? Yeah.
I don't know. Is the answer. I don't know. You know.
Yeah.
And at Easter time there, I actually contacted a charity, a suicide charity, because it just got so overwhelming.
Oh, Deirdre, that is,
you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a situation that there's piles of us, like, you know, in this situation, and there's no answer, and there's no one speaking up for us either.
I do think, and it has occurred to me actually many times during this housing debate, that we speak about first-time buyers and families.
Yeah.
And people in that situation a lot, and it's almost as if they are the only people who are hit by this. But people in your position and others who find themselves, for one reason or another, with just one income at most, and I suppose we should think a lot of people don't even have the one income. But
absolutely.
Even if you are, you've worked hard, you have an income, and you are completely locked out of any hope of security in this line.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's sad.
It is. It's a very, very difficult situation. And as you say, you're not even, you know, around your home area.
And then because of COVID as well, I've been isolated here. Do you know? And it just really hit home. Like, your home place is important to you. You know, and then because I can't go back up there because it's too expensive, I looked at rent in Dublin just as a laugh. And I'd say if I were to get, because I don't want a house share, so I'd be looking at spending about $2,200 per month on rent.
Just for a one bed, for one.
Just to kind of in the town or that type of way. Like, so, and your pay isn't that much. So how can you? How can you do it?
Possible.
Yeah. You want to have serious high income to have that and be able to live with it. It is. It's a huge, huge issue. And Deirdre, I really hope you get support
and you
can keep your chin up and keep going. And, you know, let's hope that the policies that we're all talking about every day and day out now will actually make a difference to the likes of yourself and to everyone out there in your position. We'll have to take a break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And we're still talking about this job advert for a caretaker for the St. Bridget's Cathedral in Kildare. Morris thought it was very unusual and wrong to be offering a job for without a salary attached to a job that was coming with a free accommodation but no salary. Jim, you wouldn't mind that job?
No, I think it's kind of a job that would only suit certain types of people. Now, in my own position here at the moment, I mean, I'm retired, early retired now, but still fairly active. So I was just thinking, like, someone like a couple like ourselves, like that, we don't necessarily need to work, but the accommodation would be, we say, helpful. And once the return you had to give for it wasn't too too strenuous. In other words, that you didn't have to be a real sort of a semi-qualified handyman. It's like something that I thought, yeah, maybe people like that could do, you know?
Yeah. Now, I do think it is, you know, people who are working this area would say, you know, being a caretaker, you have to be a jack of many trades.
Well, I did something similar now in a past life where I had a house provided that I was caretaker. And, I would be expected, we say, to look after certain things. But in the event of something that I felt, well, no, that's just beyond me. Like, it was just, my part of my job would be, well, listen, can you organise a qualified person to come in and do that job and, you know, oversee it when it's being done, you know?
Yeah.
But I wouldn't, it really depends on that. Like, I mean, it's a church, like, you know, so I can't see any major handyman jobs being done other than the general upkeep and cleaning and changing of bulbs and simple enough stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And so then a bit of gardening then as regards, we say, keeping the grounds in order. And that. Like, obviously, you'd have to sit down and see what was expected of you and would it be worth your while, would you be able to do it and how much of your time would it take up. But I wouldn't knock it. I wouldn't knock it straight away. But I say, like, it's one of these jobs that you could nearly say specialised. It's only going to suit certain people. Like, you know what I mean? A lot of people, as I say, it wouldn't suit.
Mm-hmm.
You would need a separate income, as you say, to put the food on the table and that, you know.
Yeah, I've got another man who I think it might suit. Danny, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Kate.
You live in Roscommon.
I do, yeah.
But you'd be prepared to move to Kildare, would you?
Well, if I was living up there, I think it would be a very handy job, you know. Like, if you have two people that in their mid to late 60s that are on a pension.
Yeah.
You could move into the house, you had free rental. You could rent your own house. And if you were getting 1,500 a week or 1,500 a month for it, you know, you're talking about over 3,000 a month of an income in total between the pension and your house. And you have free accommodation.
Yeah, well, when you put it that way.
And you have a kind of a pastime then, looking after the church, looking after the ground. It can't be that strenuous. You're not going to be able to climb the steeple and replace lathes.
Yeah, and you know, you're not the only one now of that view. Ger, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon. This is Ger. Can I just say three syllables now? Forgive me if I sound a bit pompous. Three syllables. Adventure. It's an adventure. Another chap mentioned opportunity. It's an adventure. They're not trying to solve Ireland's homelessness crisis. It's an ad. It's a local church. I assume they're not billionaires. They came up with an idea. It's an idea. It's an opportunity. It's a chance. Please stop talking about how revenue will lose out and contributions. And your social welfare might suffer. It is an adventure. It doesn't suit everybody. It might suit two young people. It might suit two older people. So I'm very sorry. It won't suit other people. What is the problem?
Well, Morris's issue is that it was a job that required qualifications and that if you're asking people to do it work for you, you should pay for it.
Yes. And the payment is, they didn't spell it out maybe, but the payment appears to me to be decent. It is the use of a house. You don't own the house, but you're God, you know. Then don't go for the job. You have a house to live in. As I said, it goes back to adventure. Take it easy, like, you know. They're not asking for a homeless family, God love them, with four children on the streets to come in and work. They're asking for probably a certain type of couple to do this. It's a house. A house can go up as far as, 1,500 in rent, even 2,000. So it's a house. You can plan maybe your plan B then for next year from that house that you are occupying. And skills level. Now, I'm not very skilled in most things. I'm quite unskilled except in languages. But do you need to be highly skilled to look after the basic needs of a church?
Well, it is caretaker stroke verger. And a verger, apparently, I'm told, is somebody who's usually a lay person who assists in the ordering of religious services. So this is particularly in Anglican churches. And as we know, this is, of course, an Anglican church, St. Bridget's Cathedral.
So, yeah.
I sincerely, with respect to all caretakers, I don't think they're looking for a guy to be up on scaffolding or on the roof of the building, you know, every second weekend, 48 hours a week. When you mentioned the word verger there, I hadn't realised it, but I'm thinking of people, it'll be more extreme than this, but I'm thinking of people. Is it a sacristan? Is somebody who helps the priest? I'm not sure. What
yeah, I think it's probably a similar role, yeah.
I really don't see the problem. I don't see that you have to be... Yeah, sure, I can't change a light bulb, so I won't go for the job because I don't know how to change a light bulb, and if I did try to change an old one, I'd probably put my finger up it and get a bit of a shock. So it's not for me. But I don't think they want people to have wheelbarrows and shovels and spades and to be digging all around them and then, up, as I say, up on scaffolding and on the roof. It sounds to me like it's not... Anyway, what... We're talking around it. We're talking. Go and be interviewed. That's what I say. Go and have the interview and see what it's about.
Okay. Emmett O'Reilly, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, you were looking at this and saying, could there be a tax issue?
Yeah, so over the years.
A tax issue now, I'm thinking, for a job that doesn't pay any salary.
Well, exactly. Revenue over the years have clamped down on all sorts of benefit in kind. Company cars is obviously one that people would know. So company gives you a company car, you get taxed on the value or the deemed value of that car. Accommodation is another one. So if you get free or discounted accommodation, revenue will look at the saving that you have made in not having to pay for that accommodation. And in this case, let's say it's 24 grand per annum is the rental that you are not being asked to pay. They will look at that and say that's benefit in kind and will actually tax you accordingly. So they will tax you on the basis that your income is actually €24,000. Now, what that leads to in tax is probably, you know, a small number of thousands of euro, but it is money. So
you could actually end up having to pay to do this caretaker job.
Yes.
Oh, no.
God, this is like a Netflix documentary here. Guys, in fact, it probably could make one. I mean, maybe I'm too old. Maybe I just grew up too accepting I wasn't a caretaker, but I was a warden in a youth hostel about 40 years ago, and the pay was, well, maybe it was 30 years ago, the pay was 40 quid a week. It wasn't great, but I had the use of the house. It was fantastic. Now, I wasn't married with six kids.
Yeah, but you were also getting paid, Ger.
40 quid, yeah.
Yeah. And there, I presumably there was no benefit in kind being being sought 40 years ago.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but this is getting really I mean, the very first caller, I think, came on and started citing issues with social welfare and revenue. God, I didn't think we were at that stage, you know. I mean, just go along.
But the rules are the rules, Ger. One is, if you're going to be applying for a job seeker's benefit, you have to be in a position to seek a job. And if you are... otherwise engaged or employed, you can't apply for that welfare benefit. And if you are, if you have the equivalent of an income of 24,000 a year, you are going to have to pay the tax on that, I guess.
Okay, so yeah, well, once again, I can always, my escape clause is, well, if it doesn't suit you, it doesn't suit you. It may well suit somebody in their 60s or 50s who pre-retired or retired and have the wherewithal to pay these possible taxes or taxes that might be due. Yes, so it's not for everybody. But can I also mention about the free house, about giving it away? I reckon there's about 200,000 second homes in Ireland. It could be less, it could be more. I'm plucking that now from the air. Second homes. Well, if a caller is so generous with other people's houses as to say that, why doesn't the local church house somebody homeless in it? Well, there's 200,000 second homes in Ireland. I don't care if they're investments or if they're badly needed. Couldn't some of those people then be asked to give their second home to a homeless couple? So bringing in homelessness into this, they didn't set out to solve the problem of homelessness in Ireland. It's a bit of an unusual deal.
Okay.
We give you a house, hop in and sure, we see how it works out. That's it.
Okay, Brian Lowry, you did this in the States, in America.
Yeah, I did, Katie, in Los Angeles, yeah.
Yeah, when was this?
Oh, it was in the 90s, quite a while ago.
And tell me, what was your deal?
Well, basically, I managed, I think it was about 34 apartments and there was no rent. I didn't have to pay any rent and I just collected the rents off the tenants and dealt with any issues that came up and, you know, done a bit of tidying around the place. There was, you know, and I could do another job when I was doing that as well. I was driving a limousine, you know, so, but it got a bit too crazy. I mean, obviously, LA, there's, you know, it's not exactly, you know.
It's not Kildare Town.
Anything goes, you know. I was telling you a researcher there. I actually had a hatchet held to my neck one night and there was water thrown through windows and there was a guy came running up the stairs one day shouting, man, my girlfriend just stabbed me. And I says, well, what do you want me to do about it? And he goes, okay, man, ran back down the stairs again and I didn't see him again, you know. So, and there was, you know, there was one guy called Smokey. His girlfriend was throwing clothes out through the front door and these clothes would be all over the grass. And I was coming down one evening and Smokey's clothes were all over the grass again. And he was standing by outside the apartment. I said, another row, Smokey? He says, yeah, Brian, I'm getting tired of this, man. So I said to him, why don't you bring the wardrobe outside, Smokey? That way she won't have as far as to throw them. But, you know, it's a win-win situation, I suppose. I mean, if you don't like paying rent, you're saving €1,000 a month, aren't you, you know? And if you can do something else, and obviously out in Kildare, you know, you've got nice surroundings, haven't you? And it doesn't take up all your time, you know, and it's a win-win. They have a bit of security. They've got somebody on site when they need them. And I think, yeah, I would do it again. Maybe might not do it in LA, but I'd do it in Kildare or somewhere. That's for sure, you know.
And I'm fascinated. I'd love to have you on a bit longer, Brian, and find out a few more stories from that. What part of LA was it in? Actually,
I've written an audio book. It's called Where To, Sir, about getting lost in the limousine with famous people in, you know. But it was in, I moved, this was actually in the place called Torrance, you know, and it's near Manhattan Beach. So plus, I mean, I was the right age. I was young. I was 28 or something. It was a buzz, you know. I'm from Roscommon originally, like, and I enjoyed the time there. I don't think maybe I wouldn't like to keep doing it, though, that's for sure. I questioned towards the end. There was a lot more bizarre things went on, but you just question, is this worth it, really, you know? But I was in a jam at the time, and it got me out of that jam, basically. But, yeah, I think it's a win-win situation for, you know,
if you can manage to live with it, yeah. If you have the cash or the wherewithal to support yourself.
Well, you know, it's ideal for young people going around the world as well, but that's a different story. But if somebody was going off to somewhere, Australia, wherever, and they got a deal like that, they'd love it, wouldn't they? You know, because, you know, rents are gone sky high, and you are saving that money, that rent every month, like, you know. And then if you can, it means you don't have to work as hard, basically, as well. Really, do this job that the guy. I mean, the woman I work for, she just. Basically, it was easy enough, you know, apart from the craziness that used to go on, you know.
Yeah. Brian, thanks for that. I want to go to Roger now. Roger, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Yeah. You said this is something that would have been fairly common in the past.
Yeah, in the 80s and the 90s.
Yeah.
I know several people who did it. And I think the early guys might have been reading the ad the wrong way or taking the wrong thing out of it. It's basically set up for maybe a young couple who are late 20s, early 30s, who are trying to save for a house. And they'd move in for maybe 3 years or 5 years with an agreement. And you'd start off a three-month trial, see if there's a suit for people. And you end up cutting the lawns on a Saturday, turning the lights on, turning the heat on in the winter. It could be 6, 8, 10 hours a week.
Oh, and really? You don't think it would be a full-time requirement at all?
No. I'm Church of Ireland, so I know how the system works.
Is this a particular thing that would have been done within the Church of Ireland caretaking?
Well, our faith was a very small faith engagement.
Roger, can I just ask you if you're talking into the phone because you're...
Yeah.
Yeah, just there. Yeah. Okay, that already sounds a bit better. So, yeah. you're a Church of Ireland yourself,
Church of Ireland. Yeah. So we're probably about 2% now, but back in the 80s we might have been about 3% of the population. So we actually went through what the Catholic Church is going through now, where we lost our priests and clergy and everything years ago, where it's all happening to the Catholic Church now. So where a house might have been vacant or the clergyman might have been needed help. And a lot of our young clerics came were single because they were moving on to some place for 2 or 3 years. So mm-hmm. a young couple would go in, they'd move into the house. The man would be working, she'd be either there or she might be working, and they'd be only maybe 10, 12 hours a week. So you'd open the church on a Sunday,
probably a half eight communion, half 11 service, and the lights on, and there's usually a rota of cleaners that come in, so there wouldn't be a huge amount of cleaning, but it would be light maintenance. So if there was any major problem like the boiler gone, you just say to the committee, we've got to get somebody in to fix the boiler. So I think they're all reading it the wrong way, that people are trying to take advantage. It's not that type of job. And it gives a young couple a chance to save, so they could save for the deposit. So if you got in for 3 years or 5 years and it worked, they'd have a good deposit saved, so they could move on.
Yeah, well, I suppose if you look at it that way, yeah, if you look at the 24,000 a year, which is what we're saying you would have maybe have to pay in rent otherwise, multiply that by three, you're getting close to, you're getting a good deposit then, aren't you?
Yeah, I know several people have done it in the past, in the 80s and 90s, and it worked out well for them, it worked out for the church, and it's a bit of security, because a lot of churches are empty now and they're getting broken into. On both sides of the fence, like, I have friends who are Catholics and they tell me the same thing, their churches are getting broken into and there's nobody to look after them. Where we've had this problem for years and sort of solved it this way.
So this is how and, this is...
So I know the first caller is a full-time maintenance guy, but it's not pitched at that sort of person. It's pitched at a person who's working and is handy and doesn't mind cutting lawns and maybe doing a painting or cleaning or whatever.
Right.
And then, It's actually a great start to somebody, especially now the way things are.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good perspective on it, and it's good to know that it's, you know, that this is something you've seen before, and as you say, it's worked out well for couples.
It's going on for probably 50 or 70 years,
right?
All over the country. And it's, you know, you sit down, you trash out a deal, you say, okay, I'll try for 3 months. If it doesn't suit me, you leave. If it does, we'll take a 3-year agreement or 5-year agreement, and then. You get your ESB allowance, you get your coal allowance, you get your thing, and then if you spend any money after that, you just top it up yourself.
And is this purely down to the Church of Ireland being strapped for funds, really?
Well, you see, we're 2% of the population, so it wasn't really that they're strapped for funds. It was a way of giving somebody a start, more so than strapped for funds, because they're getting the value of the house, and they're putting in maybe 10 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
After their own work. So you're getting a fantastic opportunity to get into a house for 2 or 3 years before the kids come along. Or maybe it might suit somebody whose marriage is broken up and they need a house until they get on their feet and they have a good job and they don't mind working maybe 1 or 2 hours in the evening and then cutting the lawns on a Saturday.
Yeah.
So this huge, if you open your mind to it, it's actually, they're trying to help people. It's not to take advantage of anybody.
Will you stay there, Roger? I want to bring in Anne. Anne, good afternoon. Do we still have Anne on the line?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, I can hear you, Anne, now, yes. You were listening to Roger there.
Yeah, no, to be honest with you, I can't see anything wrong with it. I mean, ultimately, it's a personal choice if you apply for it. There's no one being frog-marched in and told they have to take the job. I think it could suit a retired couple. It could suit somebody who wanted to write the book, who was setting up their own business, maybe from home. I think there's this huge potential. And I think at the moment you have people who house this, people who I've seen ads for people to come in and mind dogs when people are going on holidays in exchange for staying in the accommodation. So I don't think it's that hard a proposition.
Yeah, well, as Roger was explaining there, that it's actually, it's not that unusual in the Church of Ireland that this has been going on for many years, maybe more often in the 80s and 90s, as he said, but that it's
well,
as much about...
I've seen loads of ads for people to house it. Now, these are even high-end luxury accommodations, say, on the continent. And I do remember reading about somebody who came over here to house this. You know, to have some from a security reason. So, like that last gentleman said, I don't think it's a completely new concept.
But yeah, you see nothing wrong with it anyway.
Absolutely not, no. And it's a choice. Nobody, as I said, there's not a gun being put to anyone's head.
Indeed, there isn't. There isn't. And thanks for that. And Roger, thanks for that. 51551 is our text line. If you want to get in touch, we'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And you're welcome back. And now we're going to go to Rian O'Donovan. Rian, good afternoon to you.
How are you, Katie?
Rian, you drive, is it a white van?
Yeah, I'm out in the van. I'm actually just getting parking here now, 2 seconds.
Okay, take your time. Don't cause an accident, for the love of God.
No, we have parking here now. I'm out in the vans. I'm a delivery driver. I work for a meat company. So we'll be delivering chicken and beef to most of the Chinese takeaways and butcher shops all around Dublin and just outside Dublin as well. So
what's the problem?
Yeah. So the issue is, in around March or April there last year, we were deemed essential workers. And there wasn't much traffic on the roads. It was easy enough to get the job done, like go in, do our delivery without any hassle at all. But obviously the economy is opening up again. And I'm all for that now, once it doesn't affect my work. But what we're noticing is there's a lot more cycle lanes being put in. There's a lot more bollards being put on pathways so that delivery drivers can't pull up on paths to do deliveries. And there's a severe lack of loading bays as well for delivery drivers.
I was just going to ask, because I obviously a lot of streets have been pedestrianised, even just for the summer and that. What happens when that happens then? Do those bollards come down for deliveries in the morning, or how do you manage?
No, these are permanent bollards. These are just placed on the pathways, or there's traffic cones. It's just there's a complete disregard for people doing deliveries. I don't know what to be thinking. And with the loading bays as well, people are just pulling their cars in there and not thinking about the delivery driver, you know?
Because the other parking spots are gone.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And people want to park right beside the shop. But I think people just think that the food arrives on the shelves without having to be delivered. You know, they're thinking it's getting dropped in on drones. But there's anywhere you go in town, you'll see white vans double parked on double yellow lines, or hazards on parked in bus lanes. Because people will probably think we're ignorant, but we're being forced to do this. Our arm is twisted because there's a severe lack of places to do deliveries.
Well, I have, I think, seen that indeed, and kind of, you know, maybe said things about white delivery vans or whatever colour they are under my breath when I saw them illegally. What I would say, dangerously parked in some cases, to be fair.
I'll hold my hand up like this, but we have to do it. That's part of the job. Like, we're going through town, and any of the main roads going through town, there's takeaways on the side of the roads, like, you know what I mean, right beside traffic lights, and there's nowhere to pull in, you know, and we're just literally pulling up on the path. And then when you pull up on the path, you're getting abuse from pedestrians, and then, you know, then you're getting abuse from guards as well. What else are we supposed to do, you know?
And would you have big trays of meat that you'd have to deliver then?
Yeah, so we have boxes of chicken and we have boxes of beef. And they range from about 20 kilos to about 30 kilos sometimes. And then there'll be bags of ribs as well. They're about 35 kilos.
Right, yeah. So you're not going to be carrying them for very, very far, are you?
Oh, no. There's a severe issue in around Cable Street and up around Phibsborough as well, on the Phibsborough Road. There used to be places to pull in on the side of the road, but they've stuck these little poles up for the cycle lanes, so you can't even pull in on the path. So you're driving maybe 500 metres to 700 metres away from the shop, double parking around the corner, and then you have to fill up the trolley, and you could be filling it with 5 boxes, and that's 100 kilo to 120 kilos handy. You have to go then and wheel that up to the shop, and with the weather at the moment, like, you're driving around with the trolley there and you're wearing a mask and you're sweating buckets, you know, and I just don't understand it. Like, and there actually is no loading bays anywhere around the shops up around Phibsborough, you know, on that Phibsborough Road. So,
okay, will you stay there, Rian? I've got Seamus on another line. Seamus, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie.
You were listening to Rian there.
Yes, I was one of those aggrieved pedestrians yesterday, actually, in Phibsborough. I was walking along with my husband, and next of all, a my van came behind me and almost knocked me down, knocked me off the path. I totally sympathise with the driver that there isn't, doesn't seem to be quite a lot of space. But I would make a general point that in this country, we've always prioritised cars, including delivery vehicles, over everybody else. And I suppose in recent months, there has been a bit of a redress, starting of a redress to redress the balance with small changes towards pedestrians and cyclists. And I suppose this does feel, it does feel like oppression to delivery vehicle drivers and to car owners because they've had it their way for so long. So I suppose I would want to make that general point that I think having small changes towards pedestrians is, should be the start of redesigning activities, really.
Rian, you've had it your own way for long enough.
Well, like, the food has to get into the places, like, for the customer. You know what I mean? So I just don't see, like, what do we have to do? Like, we can't just park up in the middle of the road the whole time.
We could actually do that. I mean, it does sound like a radical solution, but, I mean, why not discommode other car drivers or other vehicles, motorised vehicles? Why discommode pedestrians and cyclists?
I actually missed your point there. Sorry, I couldn't hear you properly.
I suppose it does sound like a radical suggestion, but I would suggest that perhaps you block traffic if you block.
Yeah, this is what we're having to do. We are literally blocking traffic. We're using bus lanes as basically a temporary parking spot. But like, I had an issue there 2 weeks ago where I was pulled into a bus lane and I had to do the delivery. And like, a delivery could take me 3 to 5 minutes, depending on how heavy or whatever distance the shop is away. But a guard, two band guards pulled up, threatened to give me a fine.
I don't think we're allowed to call them band guards anymore.
Oh, sorry, two female guards. Yep. Sorry about that now. But, you know, I had to then sit there and explain the whole situation of what I'm going to deal with, you know what I mean? And they were two nice ladies now. They did let me on, but, you know, the general feeling is that van drivers are very ignorant and will just pull in anywhere, but it has to be done, unfortunately.
I think you might be even better off not blocking public transport, but blocking other cars. I think, you know, we should have a kind of a, there is the idea of a traffic priority pyramid, really, that, you know, vulnerable pedestrians should be at the top of it. Older people or people with disabilities, and then pedestrians, and then cyclists, and then public transport, and then cars and delivery vehicles. But we've generally...
So we're at the bottom of the barrel, is it?
Yeah, well, we've generally done it the other way, I suppose.
But, I mean, Seamus, do not take Rian's point, though. I mean, you know, we all expect the food to be on the shelves when we walk into the shops. So how do we expect it to get there?
I totally do, but I'm making the point, why not block other traffic? Why block pedestrians? Why come up on paths? I mean, I totally get the point that deliveries have to be made, but I'm just wondering, why is it that pedestrians, who would be the most vulnerable people moving around, would be the ones that would be most discommoded by that?
And did that incident that you mentioned, was it yesterday in Phibsborough?
Yesterday, yeah.
Was it frightening or was it just annoying?
Frightening, very frightening, yeah.
Can you describe what happened?
Well, we were walking along a path, it happened pretty quickly, walking along a path. And next of all, a van cut in on top of us, mounted the path in front of us, and kind of, we obviously had to move into the side. And my husband did use a few expletives back at the driver, and he wasn't impressed. And I take the point that the delivery vans have to be able to make deliveries, but I'm just also making the point that it shouldn't be pedestrians that have to suffer because of that.
Yeah, Rian, you couldn't stand over that now.
Look, I think that's a ridiculous point, to be honest, how does the food get on the shelf or in the shop for a takeaway? Like, it's not like how does it actually get there? I don't see like massive cycles or what you call it, bikes going around with trailers out the back of them delivering hundreds of kilos of beef, you know. It's just the white van man has to do that.
I'm not disputing that at all. What I'm saying is that perhaps it's other cars that should be discommoded, other cars that should be delayed rather than...
Are you suggesting that he just stop in the middle of the road, Seamus?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I know.
That's the issue. I'm blocking traffic then and I'm getting dogged.
Indeed, blocking traffic, yeah. That's, and rather than blocking pedestrians or cutting off pedestrians on paths.
I don't know, no.
Yeah, Rian, you don't think that's a reasonable...
No, I don't think that's reasonable at all, no. I think that's nonsense.
Most car drivers and most delivery van drivers wouldn't think that was reasonable, but from a pedestrian point of view, I think it would be quite reasonable.
It is an issue, Rian, that the idea that you would, the first thing, you know, when you have a choice of what to block, that you would take to the footpath rather than block other traffic on the road.
Yeah, 100%. I'm not going to just park in the middle of a main street and just block up the whole town.
That's the attitude that's there. It's a widespread attitude, of course, in the country, because cars have been privatised for many decades.
But the city would grind to a halt, though, if all the delivery men decided to take the view that I'm just going to stop my van here now and, you know, do my delivery.
Then we'd have to think of other ways of planning our city.
So you think really we should go for the extreme measure, Seamus?
Well, I'm just kind of making a general point. I hope you're getting the general point that it's always the pedestrians that are at the bottom of the pyramid, and really most city planners would say it should be the way around, the traffic planners, that it should be pedestrians at the top of the pyramid and cars and delivery vehicles at the bottom of the pyramid in terms of how we plan our city.
And Rian, you reckon people have to get their food, have to get their deliveries, and...
Look, I think he has a fair point now, pedestrians, you know what I mean? Like, they have to be looked after, but I think the problem is with... Like, there's too much cars in the city, and I know for years they're trying to, like, do this whole pedestrianised thing, but I think they do need to take into context the delivery drivers. I think we should be prioritised. Otherwise, places won't have any stock.
Okay, just, very briefly, Anya, good afternoon, Anya.
Hi, Katie, how are you?
Yeah, you support Rian on this one.
Absolutely. I mean, all these decisions are made in offices, and the practicality, it's all theory over practice. You know, we have to have our stop. Those delivery guys are doing a job. I have a disabled mother trying to find disabled parking. The lads with the loading bay, never mind you pulling in for a second, they're fine. They're very conducive to helping us out. Like, this is a joke. Can we not coexist? I cycle, I drive, I use the roads both ways. But no, we can't coexist in this country. You know, we all have to be all or nothing. All has to be cycling or cars. Why can we not coexist? In an area there on the coast of Dunleary, and people, I see mothers trying to get their kids out of now where they've got this, created a new parking bay. They're being taken out by the motorists on one side and the cyclists on the other. It's an absolute joke. Yeah, all done in theory and no practice.
There definitely has been a big shake-up of how road space is being used in Dublin, and I think even just in the last 6 months.
But people aren't thinking about stock. And people trying to get stock to the destinations. I mean, think of the practicalities of a guy there trying to hump meat. Also, we're so regulated by temperatures of meat and stuff. He's, you know, walking for 5 minutes with a trolley of meat. The temperature's going to go off. Like, does no one think about this?
Yeah, that's Rian's point. I'm going to have to take a break. Thanks for that, Anya.
Okay,
51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Dave McLaughlin, good afternoon.
Hello.
To you.
How are you?
Good, good. So you're Dave from Dave's Diner in Julianstown, County Meath.
That's me.
How long have you been open there, Dave?
In November 2019, would you believe?
Right. So you opened in November 2019.
Yeah.
And you closed?
In March.
In March.
And 2020. And then we opened in August.
Mm-hmm. And you closed
down again and did 2 weeks stint at Christmas, which was madness. But anyway, did it. And then closed down until recently.
And you were all lining up to reopen on next Monday.
Yeah.
On the 5th.
No, I have to open next Monday on the 5th. There's no choice.
Well, you're being told you can't. This is for indoor dining we're talking about, Dave, is it?
Yeah, it's only 50 people. I have 50 people inside, and each table has a partition, Perspex partition. Every staff has masks on. You know, the whole thing I did with traceability, everything. I did it all right. I had the HSE come in and say, you did a great job, Dave. Thank you.
Right.
But now I can't open because I planned this. And now it might be the 19th, it might be this, it might be that. I mean, come on. There's hotels out there who have rooms who are giving people the opportunity to eat and drink in their, you know what I mean?
In their dining rooms.
And in their dining room or whatever, in the bar outside. I mean, there's hotels around the country who are just packed at the moment.
And there's hotels who are not packed.
Do you have outdoor space, Dave?
I have four tables of four outside. I've got 16 to 20 seats outside, bar if, you know, kids come into the big table. But, I mean, that's going to be like 20% of what it can turn over.
Right. But you're saying you have to open, but you can't open. You've been told you can't open.
But I'm going to open.
You're going to open?
Yeah.
You're going
to.
But how is that going to work out for you, Dave?
Well, I'll get closed down for... I have no license for drink or anything like that. So I know the HSE will probably be accompanied by the car that asked me to close down. And yes, I will. But I'm just making a stand here in some sort of way. Might be stupid or not. I don't know. But what's going on, I have to do something. I have to make a statement. I have to have hopefully other people like me who don't have a beer or wine license to just open up. And, you know, if they take me to court, They say, oh, whatever, 2.5 grand. I'm willing to do whatever time in Mountjoy to do that. I've never been arrested in my life, for one thing. I've no criminal record, but I'm willing to get one.
To defy the public health or the regulations.
To defy the public health, to defy the government. Not the guards, now. Nothing to do with the guards. The guards are, in my opinion, great. Absolutely great in every way.
Dave, do you not accept the reason for the public health advice and the decisions that were made by government this week, that this Delta variant is so transmissible that they cannot allow indoor dining at this time?
All right, I can understand that. But when I went to get my vaccine last week, I was told I was 92% covered by the Delta variant. And if I did catch it, I would probably get a slight flu.
What about the people who don't have the vaccine, Dave?
Well, they have the choice not to come in.
But are you saying
I hopefully open up. People have a responsibility. I have a signing in, which is traceability. I'll have them, you know, to work in an environment. I have my staff work in an environment where they're protected. I have the customers protected. There's four per booth. There's perspex between each booth. Come on. I mean, the football match is going on. Has anyone seen the football matches?
Outdoors, though, Dave.
Outdoors? 50,000 people sitting together.
Your bottom line anyway, Dave, is you are going to open your doors on Monday, come hell or high water.
Hell or high water. Listen, I have infrared lights that kill germs in the air. I've invested a lot of money into it. Maybe they're not true, maybe they don't work, but I've tried it anyway.
Well, okay.
Trying everything. I am absolutely at my wit's end at the moment, if you can understand that.
Well, I think everyone understand that, Dave, but also we have to say that is entirely at odds with the public health advice that has been issued this week. I'm afraid we're out of time with that one. Dave, best of luck.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And that's it for today and indeed for this week. I want to thank you all for listening and indeed all for calling in. Our BCO today was Daniel Keating. Mark McGrath was on sound. Research was by Richie Byrne. Angus McAnally produced. And the series producer is Rebecca Meehan. Stand by now for Ray Darcy.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.